But Mrs. Mabel Jarman was not to wait for long. Vaguely, her mind toyed with a few idle, random thoughts, nothing of any moment. Soon she would be home. As she was to remember later on, she could describe Sylvia fairly well. Her long blonde hair, her careless and provocative sensuality. Of the other girl, she could recall little. A light coat, dark slacks, what colour, though? Hair, lightish brown? Please try as hard as you can, Mrs. Jarman. It's absolutely vital for us that you remember as much as you can. She noticed a few cars and a heavy, bouncing, articulated lorry burdened with an improbably large number of wheelless car bodies. Men? Men with no other passengers? She would try so hard to recall. Yes, there had been men, she was sure of that. Several had passed her by. At 7:10, an oblong pinkish blur gradually assumed its firmer delineation. She picked up her bag as the red corporation bus slowly threaded its way along the stops in the grey mid-distance. Soon she could almost read the bold white lettering above the driver's cab. What was it? She squinted to see it more clearly. Woodstock. Oh dear. She had been wrong then, when that nicely spoken young girl had asked about the next bus. Still, never mind. They hadn't gone far. They would either get a lift or see the bus and manage to get to the next stop, or even the stop after that. How long had they been gone, Mrs. Jarman? She stood back a little from the bus stop, and the Woodstock driver gratefully passed her by. Almost as soon as the bus was out of sight, she saw another, only a few hundred yards behind. This must be hers. The double-decker drew into the stop as Mrs. Jarman raised her hand. At 7:02, she was home. Though a widow now, with her two children grown up and married, her pride and poverty semi-detached was still her real home, and her loneliness was not without its compensations. She cooked herself a generous supper, washed up, and turned on the television. She could never understand why there was so much criticism of the programmes. She herself enjoyed virtually everything, and often wished she could view two channels simultaneously. At 10:00, she watched the main items on the news, switched off, and went to bed. At 10:30, she was sound asleep. It was at 10:30 p.m. too, that a young girl was found lying in a Woodstock courtyard. She had been brutally murdered. Part 1. Search for a Girl. Chapter 1. Wednesday, 29th of September. From St. Giles in the centre of Oxford, two parallel roads run due north like the prongs of a tuning fork. On the northern perimeter of Oxford, each must first cross the busy northern ring road, along which streams of frenetic motorists speed by, gladly avoiding the delights of the old university city. The eastern branch eventually leads to the town of Banbury, and thence continues its rather unremarkable course towards the heart of the industrial Midlands. The western branch soon brings the motorist to the small town of Woodstock, some 8 miles north of Oxford, and thence to Stratford-upon-Avon. The journey from Oxford to Woodstock is quietly attractive. Broad grass verges afford a pleasing sense of spaciousness, and at the village of Yarnton, after only a couple of miles, a dual carriageway with a tree-lined central reservation finally sweeps the accelerating traffic past the airport and away from its earlier paralysis. For half a mile immediately before Woodstock, on the left-hand side, a grey stone wall marks the eastern boundary of the extensive and beautiful grounds of Blenheim Palace. The mighty mansion built by good Queen Anne for her brilliant general John Churchill, 1st Duke of Marlborough. High and imposing wrought iron gates mark the main entrance to the palace drive, and hither flock the tourists in the summer season, to walk amidst the dignified splendour of the great rooms, to stand before the vast Flemish tapestries of Malpaquet and Audenarde, and to see the room in which was born that later scion of the Churchill line, the great Sir Winston himself, now lying in the once peaceful churchyard of nearby Bladen village. Today, Blenheim dominates the old town, yet it was not always so. The strong grey houses which line the main street have witnessed